Gopi Jan Bala Bhagini Vadan Hari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Padivajakacharya, Asatara, His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti, Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai, Prem Shikaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhunicha Ananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Sadigor, Bhaktivinda Kijai, Sri Sri Radha Shamasunda Gopa Gopinath, Shamakund, Radhakund, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Kijai, Mathura Dham Kijai, Navadweep Dham Kijai, Jagannath Puri Dham Kijai, Jagannath Swami Kijai, Jamunamayi Kijai, Gunga Mayi Kijai, Bhakti Devi Kijai, Srimati Tulsi Maharani Kijai, Samaveda Bhaktivinda Kijai, Gopremanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pasyatya Desatarini Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Continuing our reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 25, which is called The Glories of Devotional Service. Today's text number 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utumashloke bhaktir bhavati naistaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan. Unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So today is text number 13. This is actually the first verse that Kapila is now speaking. You know, the questions have been going on, and now he's going to start to speak, give some of his instructions. So here's our verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Yoga Adhyatmika Pumsam. Yoga Atyatmika Pumsam. Mato Nishreya Sayame. Mato Nishre Yasayame. Atyanto Paratir Yatra. Atyanto Paratir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Yoga Atyatmika Pumsam. Mato Nishreya Yasya Me. Atyanto Paratir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Please chant. Yoga Atyatmika Pumsam. Tony Shreya Sayame. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Yoga Atyatmika Pumsam. Tony Shreya Sayame. Atyanto Praratir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Yoga Atyatmika Pumsam. Mato Nishreya Sayame. Atyanto Paratir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Vaishnavis. Yoga Adyatmika Pumsam. Yato Nishreya Sayame. Atyanto Padatir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Yoga Adyatmika Pumsam. Mato Nishreya Sayame. Atyanto Paratir Yatra. Dukasya cha, sukasya cha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Personality of Godhead said, Yoga, the yoga system, Adhyatmika, relating to the soul, Pumsam, of living entities, Mata, is approved. Nishreyasaya, for the ultimate benefit, may, by me, Adyanta, complete, Uparati, detachment, Yatra, where, Dukasya, from distress, Cha, and, Sukasya, from happiness. Cha and translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead answered, the yoga system which relates to the Lord and to the individual soul, which is meant for the ultimate benefit of the living entity, and which causes detachment from all happiness and distress in this material world, in the material world, is the highest yoga system. So let's say that together. The Personality of Godhead answered, the yoga system which relates to the Lord and to the individual soul, which is meant for the ultimate benefit of the living entity, and which causes detachment from all happiness and distress in the material world, is the highest yoga system. Om Aginati Medandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chaksu Umilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance and My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, very kindly forced open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Therefore, I'm indebted to Srila Prabhupada life after life and beg for service at his lotus feet forever and ever. Hare Krishna. So just as a tad of a review, this chapter began with Devahuti, and Devahuti is asking her questions. She's expressing her regrets. She's expressing her apparent fallen condition. So starting with verse 8, she starts with verse 7. I'm just going to review those verses because it's very obviously very important and related to the Lord's answer. So Devahuti said from 7, she said, I'm very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Your Lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance because you are my transcendental eye, which by your mercy only I have attained after many, many births. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and supreme Lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of the ignorance of the universe. Now, be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. She continues, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You are the axe. Remember that example. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you, who are the greatest of all transcendentalists, and I inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. So this is the preamble, the introduction to Devahuti's apparent dilemma. Obviously, Devahuti is an extremely exalted, perfected being, but as the means of teaching us, she's taking on this apparent confusion, this apparent bewilderment, and asking Lord Kapila very precisely to eradicate her illusion. So the Lord, obviously, he doesn't waste any time. He goes right to the prime answer. So this yoga system, which relates to the Lord and the individual soul, which is meant for the ultimate benefit, that's also an important word, the ultimate benefit of the living entity, and which causes detachment from not just material distress, but detachment from happiness, because even one, if one is attached to happiness in the material world, one becomes gradually more and more entangled in material life. And this is the highest yoga system. So I'll force myself to read the whole purport all the way through at one time. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the material world, everyone is trying to get some material happiness. But as soon as we get some material happiness, there is also material distress. In the material world, one cannot have unadulterated happiness. Any kind of happiness one has is contaminated by distress also. Now, who understands that? Uh-oh, I'm breaking my rule. I'm going to read the whole thing. Okay. Any kind of happiness one has is contaminated by distress also. For example, if we want to drink milk, then we have to bother to maintain a cow and keep her fit to supply milk. Drinking milk is very nice. It is also a pleasure. But for the sake of drinking milk, one has to accept so much trouble. The yoga system, as here stated by the Lord, is meant to end all material happiness and material distress. The best yoga, as taught in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, is bhakti yoga. It is also mentioned in the Gita that one should try to be tolerant and not be disturbed by happiness or distress. Of course, one may say, he is not disturbed by material happiness. But he does not know that just after one enjoys so-called material happiness, material distress will follow. This is the law of material nature. This is the law of material world. Lord Kapila states that the yoga system is the science of the spirit. One practices yoga in order to attain the perfection of the spiritual platform on the spirit. One practices yoga in order to attain perfection on the spiritual platform. There is no question of material happiness or distress. It is transcendental. Lord Kapila will eventually explain how it is transcendental, but the preliminary introduction is given here. Hare Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada states very clearly in this purport the real purpose and the real perfection of yoga. So in the verse, it says, adhyatmika yoga, the yoga that pertains not only to the individual soul, but to the supreme soul also. In other words, right from the very beginning, this yoga system is destroying some of the Mayavadi conceptions or some of the impersonalist conceptions that the living entity and the Supreme Lord are one. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains, yes, they're one, but they're also different. Yes, they're one in the sense that the living entity is made out of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, and the Supreme Lord, he's made out of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But there's a huge difference between the two living entities. The living entity, the jiva, the small little jiva, whose size is only 1/10,000th the tip of the size of a hair of a head, which even that kind of breaks your thought process when you try to think of how small that is. That's his size. So he has some eternity, he has some knowledge, he has some bliss, but it is so minute compared to the Supreme Lord, who is full of all transcendental potencies and unlimited knowledge, unlimited bliss, and unlimited existence, never disturbed by any material situation. So it's very telling that the Supreme Lord states that this yoga system, which relates to the Lord and the individual soul, it's actually meant for the ultimate benefit of the living entity. In other words, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, when the yoga ladder is explained, there's different stages of realization. And they're presented because everybody's in different places on their path back home, back to Godhead. As you well notice in a community, you see that there's different grades of consciousness, and people are able to understand a certain amount of things, accept a certain amount of things, execute a certain amount of things, and the next person is able to understand in a different way, different things, and somehow or other we try all to live together because we put Krishna in the center. But because people are on different levels, there's different levels of self-realization that are presented to the living entity. There's different stages, we'll say. There's different stages of self-realization that are presented to the living entity in the process of yoga itself. But Kapila specifically here is explaining the topmost yoga system. He goes right to the topmost yoga system. So understanding the topmost yoga system means that we also have to understand there's different levels and different degrees. So someone, and especially in this perverted reflection of civilization known as Kali Yuga, people think yoga means some sort of stretching exercise in general. People think yoga means something that's good for your mind and your senses and your general well-being to be peaceful here in the material world. But right here in this verse, it explains that, no, we don't want that satisfaction in the material world. We don't even want the happiness of material world, because happiness in the material world, even that conditions one to a state of certain types of activities which continue to bind one in material existence. even they might be, quote unquote, a better situation or a more elevated position, et cetera, free from, or not necessarily free, but with less material distress and suffering, still there's the distress and suffering that's there. Srila Prabhupada explains it's the law of nature. You can't have happiness without distress. And again, who understands that in this day and age, in general? Who understands that? No, everyone's striving for happiness and receiving such a small token of it, and yet thinking that that little bit of happiness makes life worthwhile. Yet it's so entangling. So in this, where's the one with the axe? When it was talking about the axe, in the purport, where? Oh, it was in the other verses. Thank you. It was in the other verses that Devahuti was saying that you are the axe. Thanks. Thank you, Krishna, and thank you, devotees. 11. Yeah, 11. Thank you. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence, which the Lord explains in the 15th chapter of the Gita, that the banyan tree of material existence, it's a perverted reflection. Actually, when a person has their, in the proper consciousness, they can understand that the Supreme Lord is the center of all activities, and we are his parts and parcels, and we're meant to serve the Supreme Lord. When we have that straight, then we're in proper consciousness. But the material world is a reflection of that, and we're thinking that my desire is the most important. I'm the center. I'm the center. And therefore, all the activities that I do and everyone else should do should be for my satisfaction. But Krishna says there in that chapter, he said, this conception has to be cut down with the axe of detachment from material world, detachment from material happiness, even material happiness we have to become detached from, because that will ultimately lead one to further entanglement. As we've seen in the examples in Srimad Bhagavatam and so many different characters in the Bhagavatam, they have a certain material desire. Let's take Chitraketu, for example. Just popped into my head. Chitraketu. So he was living a religious life. He understood that, you know, in order to be happy, one has to perform sacrifice and one has to give to the Supreme Lord, etc., etc. And all one's desires can only be fulfilled by the Supreme Lord's pleasure, by his grace. So therefore, when he was feeling very bereft because he didn't have a son to take over the kingdom after him, and he prayed, he followed the Vedic system. Do this sacrifice, perform this action, and please the Lord in this way, and you'll get this result. So he followed that system to perform a sacrifice or have someone perform a sacrifice so that he could get a child. And the sage said to him, very foretellingly, he told him, I'll give you a child, but this child will be the source of what? Happiness and distress. And so did he think immediately of the worst type of distress? No, he thought of just a little distress. He'll just be a little, maybe he'll talk back a little bit every now and then. Maybe he'll be a little disobedient and that'll be a small little problem. But he was in his mind thinking of, the happiness of having the perfect son, etc., etc. So he did. He had the perfect son, and you're familiar with the story, how it caused distress to the other queens, the other 99,000 queens, 999,000 other queens that he had married. Or is it a million? 999 million other queens that he had married, whatever, all the other wives. And therefore, they all grouped together to poison the son, and he experienced such distress on the loss of his son that he fainted, he lost all composure, etc., etc. So, but interestingly to note is that he followed a Vedic process for fulfilling his desire. But this is what's the striking difference of this yoga system that the Lord is about to talk about. He's going to talk about the system of yoga that brings the ultimate happiness to the living being, which has nothing to do with interrelationships or positions or stuff in the material world. It has to do directly with the individual soul's direct relationship of service to the Supreme Lord. That's what he's going to talk about, and that's the ultimate benefit that one can derive from the topmost yoga system. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, in those beginning six chapters, when it talks about the yoga ladder, etc., etc., Karmakanda is the basis of beginning civilization. That people understand that I'm not in control. There's a supreme intelligence, a supreme controller that's in control. There are ways and means for me to live in this world that I accept from the scriptures. I accept those ways and means. And if I follow those ways and means, I can live in a way that's little less disturbing, little less problematic, relatively happy, relatively comfortable. So that's a step. That's the first step. Below that is just animalistic life. I do whatever I want. I don't care about anything. No, there's nobody in control. And it's just animal life. Karmakanda is the first step. So it's a beginning. So it's encouraged. It's encouraged for people to follow the Karmakanda system. But it's not the ultimate goal. There's higher and higher levels of yoga that are revealed throughout the Vedic literature and in Bhagavad Gita than of fixing the mind on higher and higher levels of understanding till the point where one can realize that the Supreme Lord is situated in my heart, Paramatma realization. There's the realization, the level of Brahman, that one realizes that we're all spirit, this and that. Then higher than that is to realize that the Supreme Spirit is right there in my heart. He's in my heart also. But then there's a trap in that path also. If one doesn't have good guidance on that path, then the entrapment is that sometimes the yogis end up thinking that I am that supreme soul that I'm seeing in my heart. That's me. I'm the Lord. And they become, just as Srila Prabhupada says, entrapped by the last snare of Maya, thinking that they're God. But still, it's still progress from animalistic life, atheistic life, then a little bit of life of theism that you understand that there's a supreme controller, then you understand that there's a supreme Lord in your heart, and then further on, this highest platform of yoga system that Kapila is about to explain is this topmost process of bhakti yoga. This topmost process of bhakti yoga where one might have some material desire. Classic example is Dhruva Maharaj or Gajendra. Gajendra wanting relief from distress of the bite of the crocodile, praise to the Supreme Lord. Dhruva wanting to show his stepmother and father and stepbrother that he actually is a very powerful person and he can sit on the lap of his father and take over his father's kingdom, even though he was blocked by his stepmother, apparently blocked by his stepmother. He took to the process of bhakti yoga with a very strong materialistic desire, but his fortune, or some of his fortune, but his greatest fortune was that he met Narada Muni. He met the pure devotee. He met the pure devotee who, through his instructions, gave him the seed of bhakti and the process. He gave him an understanding of who he was. He gave him an understanding of who he was in relation to the Supreme Lord. He gave him a practice, a sadhana practice to follow, and he gave him an understanding of the clear goal of life to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, similarly, even though our condition is way more degraded and fallen, and our determination is way less than Dhruva Maharaj, who even though he was 5 years old, in six months with such fixed determination, he was able to see the personality of Godhead face to face. So even after our 6 months of devotional service, we might not have that same conclusion just yet fixed in the heart. But the seed is planted by Srila Prabhupada's purity and his exalted position. The seed is planted in everyone's heart who comes to in contact with this Krishna consciousness movement. The seed of the highest realization of the Lord is there in the heart. And simply by the proper process of hearing and chanting, watering the plant, the creeper of devotional service, then that plant gradually sprouts, grows his leaves, and continues to grow until it takes that that creeper takes shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's an amazing journey. And Kapila Dev is about to, in this next chapter, in this chapter and continuing on, about to explain the whole journey of the living entity. Even he's going to give a glimpse of what the living entity in the womb, even in this, in that embodied state, just in the womb of his mother, how he suffers so much. Everyone's so happy on the birth of a baby, but the baby has already suffered so much inside that womb. And those fortunate personalities, some of whom are present in this room right now, who take birth from the womb of devotees, and then they get immediate information, immediate contact, immediate hearing of the Lord and association and prasadam and so many, and get to see the deities. That opportunity is so special that obviously they've performed many innumerable acts in devotional service to take birth like that. So as we become familiar with this whole process of purification, one thing that becomes more and more apparent as the days go by is just how entangling this material world is. How entangling this material world is. So just last night, we were reading in Krishna Book. We just finished the second volume of Krishna Book, and we started just on time for Janmashtami, the advent of Lord Krishna. And we were reading the story of, you know, how everyone's preparing for the birth of the Supreme Lord. Okay, so it came up, a story from there that I can relate to this class with a little bit of a stretch and your kind patience. So in this, and since it's Janmashtami, I'm going to talk about that coming up. So before Lord Balaram came into Devaki's womb, okay, for a little bit and then was transferred, there were six sons, the Satgarbhas. They have a very interesting history, and it's not explained there in the Bhagavatam in that particular place, the details of it. But I want to bring it out and highlight it a little bit because it explains how entangling material life is. It gives a little example, among other things. So now we're preparing for Krishna's birth and appearance. But before this, way before, in the beginning of creation, you have to go back now to the beginning of creation, when Lord Brahma was first creating habitats for the living entities, different pious living entities, the impious, he was creating the whole situation. At one point, in one particular point in Lord Brahma's sojourn, he became attracted to his newly created daughter, who was very, very beautiful. He became attracted to his daughter. And he actually even took the form of a stag to follow her. So when that happened, the demigods, remember the reaction of the demigods? Some of the demigods, they were like shocked. They were shocked. And they approached Lord Brahma very respectfully, headed by Marichi, to be exact, headed by Marichi. He approached Lord Brahma and said, Why are you doing this? No Brahma before you has ever done anything like this. And your activities are meant to be followed by all people. So why are you doing something so irreligious as to, you know, try to have a relationship, a physical relationship with your own daughter? It's like shocking. And that good counsel kind of snapped Brahma out of his attempt, you know. But there were other people at there. In fact, it was Marichi's own sons who had a different reaction. when they saw Lord Brahma follow his daughter, they laughed at Lord Brahma. They laughed at him in a disrespectful manner. Like, I can totally relate to that disrespectful manner. Because of why? Because of false ego. One is thinking, I'm the best. So I would never do anything like that, right? Have you ever said that to yourself? If you hear somebody's problems or somebody has a fall down, you think, poor guy, I would never do anything like that. And then if you think very carefully, if you very thoughtfully, you watch yourself over the next few weeks, usually maybe the next day, I see that I'm walking down that same path that I just said I would never, that I criticized somebody else for doing and that I said I would never do. So anyway, the sons of Marici, they laughed at Lord Brahma. And because of this offense, they were cursed to take birth again. There were 6 sons of Marici, and they were cursed to, and it's a very interesting and complicated story, so help me remember all the details, okay, Prangovinda, Prabhu? So they were cursed to take birth as the sons of Kalanemi, okay? So Kalanemi just happens to be one of the sons of Hiranyakashipu, one that you don't really hear about as much as we hear about Prahlad, thank goodness. But anyway, Kalanemi, he was a demoniac son, obviously, of Hiranyakashipu. And these 6 Satgarbhas, the 6 sons of Marici, were cursed to take birth as the sons of Kalanemi, which makes what? Makes who? Makes Hiranyakashipu is their grandfather. So they have a demoniac father, they have a demoniac grandfather, and they're taking birth. And as they're growing up, they're very strong kshatriyas, you know, and they have a desire. And their desire is they don't want to be killed by anyone. Now, does that sound familiar in that family of Hiranyakashipu? It certainly does, doesn't it? Hiranyakashipu, not wanting to be killed by anyone and wanting to control the whole universe, performs his severe austerities to satisfy Lord Brahma so that he could be not killed by man or animal or in the day or in the night, etc., etc., etc. So these Satgarbhas, now sons of Kalanemi, they do the same thing. And they approach Lord Brahma. They approach Lord Brahma and pray to and perform austerities to please Lord Brahma, who does become pleased with their austerities. And again, just to point out, it is an accepted Vedic practice to perform austerities to please a higher personality and quote unquote make progress in spiritual life. So they performed a lesser, but still an authorized process of how to supposedly become happy in the material world. But what did we read about today in our purport? And we've read many times. Prabhupada says, you can't have happiness without having distress also. It's the law of nature. So they got their boon from Lord Brahma, and they were happy temporarily. Temporarily happy having that boon that they wouldn't be killed in this way and that way and this way. But eventually, who found out? Grandpa. Grandpa found out. Hiranyakashipu found out that they had approached Lord Brahma. And was Hiranyakashipu happy that they followed his footsteps? Nope. He was offended. He was offended because he was thinking, in his sense of identity, he was thinking, I'm the most powerful, I'm the most important, and therefore you should worship me. And because you didn't worship me, I'm disowning you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And and he said, okay, now this part of the story is related in the Harivamsa. So he says, so Hiranyakashipu says, I give up my affection for you because you have left my shelter. And your father, so this is Kalanemi, your father, because these are the sons of Kalanemi, your father will kill you in your, but not in that life, in your next life, your father's going to kill you. So interestingly complicated, isn't it? And you, in your next life, you will take birth in the womb of Devaki and you will be killed by your father. Kalanemi. Amazing, huh? And this is how complicated material life is. So Kalanemi, okay, Hiranyakashipu has a son named Kalanemi. Kalanemi is demoniac mentality. He gets, Kalanemi, if you remember, gets killed by Lord Vishnu. And that's a whole story behind that, but I won't go into it because it's way too complicated. But he gets killed by Lord Vishnu, and he takes birth as the son of Ugrasena. Kalanemi takes birth as the son of Ugrasena, as Kamsa. And there's Devaki now sheltering those Satgarbhas in her womb, those six sons in her womb. And every time each one is born, Kamsa kills them personally, dashing them on the stone. How cruel, right in front of their mother. Oh, my God. Not only once, but obviously six times. But again, I just wanted to bring it up as an example of the entanglement of material world. You know, we just need to become, Srila Prabhupada has said, we're not afraid enough of Maya. He said, that's the problem with my disciples. Because one time Srila Prabhupada was praying to the deities as he was offering those obeisances, and I believe it was in Los Angeles, but whatever. One time he was praying to the deities, and the devotees afterwards, they asked Prabhupada, what were you praying for? Prabhupada said, I'm praying that I won't be caught by Maya, or something to that effect, that I won't fall victim to Maya. And, you know, the devotees are like shocked. How could Prabhupada, you know, even think that he might be doing that? He, you know, but what he's saying, and he's giving us the example, he's giving the example to us that we're not cautious enough, not afraid enough, not aware enough of how every little materialistic endeavor that we make has an action, and that action causes a reaction, and that reaction affects our consciousness. So therefore, here, back to this verse now, Kapila is explaining that this is adhyatma pumsam. This yoga system is the topmost yoga system because it relates to the living entity's topmost relationship with the Supreme Lord. So again, just to point out the take-home lesson for us is that to remember our unlimited good fortune, somehow or other we've come in contact with this topmost yoga system, this process of bhakti yoga, which is giving us the highest. We perhaps for millions of lifetimes we've been doing millions of other things that have brought us little by little, at least brought us, given us the opportunity to somehow or other come in contact with Srila Prabhupada and hear about this topmost yoga system of bhakti yoga, which is the ultimate benefit. Forget all these little other material pleasantries to let me live a long life and let me live here in a high situation so that the miseries of material life won't affect me. Forget all of that. It doesn't work. The only thing that's really going to work, the only thing that's going to bring us to our ultimate benefit is by fully attempting this process of bhakti yoga. And that's our good fortune. And our good fortune is that the Lord's appearance day is coming up, followed by the appearance of Srila Prabhupada, who gave unlimited numbers of living entities that opportunity through his Hare Krishna movement and his transcendental books. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Questions, comments, corrections, please.
In 10th canto, 2nd chapter, verse 8, Prabhupada gives actually some
yes,
hint.
Yes, he does. He does. Yes, correct.
He says, Devaki represent bhakti. And I like that purport a lot because Prabhupada said, advancing in bhakti means you will have a fear. Mm-hmm. And Devaki, the Kamsa was causing fear and she was getting purified.
Yes.
And that's how devotee is going to get purified. Oh my God, that scared me actually. I mean, we are going through that. I'm going through that. But it was very nice, very yes. soothing.
Yes.
I would say very soothing and more dedicating to
yes.
Radha Krishna eternally. So it was very nice. And also Prabhupada, in that purport, he mentioned about Kongsha represent fear of the material world. And the Satgarbha, that Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madha, Matsurya are representing with these six sons.
Yes.
It was very interesting.
It's a fascinating and complicated history. It's amazing. Yeah.
But that's the reality of yes. everybody's life.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
it was
you.
Nice class. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anything else?
Yes.
Yes. Hare Krishna. Remind me your name. Damodarpriya.
Damodarpriya.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Thank you for the Hare wonderful Krishna. Class. Madhachi, I wanted some advice on what should be our disposition when we see other people either going through too much happiness or too much distress, or like I want to wish well for others. I want to have a good feeling towards others. But then I also know in the back of my mind, if they become too much happy, then maybe they'll forget Krishna. Or if they become too much depressed, then they'll forget Krishna. So what should be kind of our disposition as devotees?
We should be the person that we want association with. You know what? Okay, so I'll explain that a little more clearly. So, for example, now I'm taking on your position. So, if this was me, and I'm concerned about somebody might be enjoying too much and might become distracted, or if someone is suffering too much and they might become distracted also, then I would appreciate someone. A friend coming and saying, "Don't forget, this material world isn't our permanent home." So, if we could be that person that will help remind somebody, and also at that same time, we also have to be detached, just like a mother. How many times, Sri Gurangiji? How many times have you given good advice to your sons? Limitedly. And do they always follow your instructions, even though they're perfect instructions? But you keep giving them, and because they hear, you know? So the covered jiva might not be able to react positively, favorably to good instructions right away, but the soul hears. The soul hears those instructions, that friendship. It appreciates that friendship. It appreciates that good advice. It appreciates those good words. And eventually they'll have their effect. So be the person that you would want to be, that you would want the association of. And you know, gently, and at the same time, gently remind them of their our position in the material world, because it's not their position, it's our position too. So again, that same idea of, I would never do that. If I got $1 million, I would give it all to Krishna. And then I get the $1 million and I think, yeah, but I need a little bit, you know, or I need a lot, or whatever, you know what I mean? We think, I would never be trying to overly enjoy in the material world. Here's true confessions. So I think, and I see all the young, beautiful girls, and they're all, you know, looking at the people on the other side of the room for a beautiful match, and I would think, ha, that's not me. Why? Because I'm an old, ugly old lady, right? But put me in a young, beautiful body, and what would I be thinking? You know what I mean? That purity of heart has to really be there, not just superficially be there. So we might be sitting here in the Bhagavatam class and we might be thinking, yes, I know the goal of life and bhakti is the goal of life and I want to love Krishna, I want to serve Krishna. And then, you know, life goes on and we have our other things that come and distract us from that ultimate goal. But by constantly hearing that, then we're brought back. So that's a little something. Hare Krishna. Yay, she's happy. Class is over. I don't blame her. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very kindly. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.